If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Your social calendar is filling up quick right now. Summer's coming, and I'm here to remind you to schedule a visit to the northwest side of Chicago, to the best butcher shop in Chicago, Joseph's Finest Meats. Why? I grew up in a butcher shop. I know the difference between quality and not quality. And I'm telling you, I would not be advertising or supporting them if I didn't know their product. Whether it's Italian sausage, USDA prime aged beef, or delicious chops, and get them thick and brine them. These guys are a must for summer cooking. If you don't have the time, you're frantic, and people are coming over, I'm not ready, go there and get what you need. They have frozen stock, they have frozen items, homemade, frozen, the kind of thing that you would serve at your home to your family and friends. When you're at Joseph's Finest Meats, Sal and Ben will treat you like family. I guarantee that, personally guarantee, because it is a family business. It's a family butcher shop. There are a few of them left. These are the last of the breed. So do yourself and anyone on your social calendar a favor and make time to visit Joseph's Finest Meats on Addison and Nordica on the far northwest side of the city. A family tradition since 1977, 7101 West Addison Street, Chicago. Prime aged beef, sausages, homemade, and only the finest meats and cheese. And don't forget the provolone. I'm going to call and check and see if you got it. Joseph's Finest Meats, the proud sponsors of John Cass News and the Chicago Way podcast. Cheers. You know, the other day I was looking through stories to write my own story, and I found one about the Tremblay family. You remember them? I bet you don't. The Tremblay family were White Sox fans from Burbank. And on August 28th, 1999, I was a green columnist back then. The Tremblay family, the dad, the mom, daughter, and her boyfriend were walking on 35th Street going to what we now call Sox Park. And there they passed a man named Thomas Cooper. Thomas Cooper was unremarkable. I mean, people didn't pay attention to him except for one thing. He had a table leg in his hand like a club with a hunk of metal on the end of it, kind of like when you take a table and break it apart. And then he began to attack. First, he clubbed the mom, Jerry Tremblay, and then he clubbed her husband, Roy, and then broke his skull, and then her boyfriend, Christy's boyfriend, the daughter's boyfriend, Brian Kwan, and then Christy got it too. Her head was broken open. I remember writing about it, and the attitude of the city at the time, of official Chicago, corporate Chicago Tribune, was, don't make this about the race. And I wasn't, but when I was told, don't make this about the race, I kind of got my back up, because I don't tell people how to think. I just laid out there. And you know what? There was a corporate panic, not at the Tribune because they let me write the column, but corporate panic in the rest of the news in Chicago. We can't really mention there was an incident in Bridgeport near 35th Street, and a guy clubbed his whole family almost to death. And eventually one did die. But we can't make it about the race. We're avoiding it. And the same kind of corporate avoidance was going on when a boy brought a knife to a track meet in Texas. And the same kind of corporate avoidance was happening when a young man took a ceremonial sword and stabbed a guy in London or England. And the police were so upset and scared that it might be a racial thing, and they ignored the fact that the victim was stabbed in the chest and bleeding to death, and they handcuffed him instead. And I'm just asking, and I need your help. I'm asking, how do we process this? How do we process the Tremblays, the attitude of the corporate world, of the official Chicago, of the official not to mention race? It's dangerous. And I'm just asking. With me today on the Chicago Way is, of course, as always, my good friend, broadcast partner, co-host, future physics teacher, Jeff Carlin, master of pies, friend to cats. And me, I'm John Cass of John Cass News, working out a column, as always, or often here on the Chicago Way, trying to think about threads that are going through this culture and country. So where are you? As Carmelo Anthony's parents wonder how many seeds of racism did they put in their child, as the country begins to try to figure out what happened and what's happening to us when we're told officially, corporately, shh, don't think about it. You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way, that's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So, Jeff, let me ask you, how do we process this, all this?
I used to have columnists and big thinkers who would write interesting, well-thought-out articles to help us figure it out for ourselves, but that world's kind of been replaced by TikTok and memes and cringe culture, so I don't know. You know me, John. I come at it from the middle, you know, who, what, where, when, how, and why, and then work my way out from there. And all these situations seem to be, like you said, just kind of, or kind of alluded to, that these are just these tools being used by power slingers of various ilks, whether they be corporate, political, or other, to get the narrative they want or get the result they want. And how do you stop that?
I don't know how you stop
it. You hold people accountable, that's for sure.
Can you hold people accountable? Does race have to be involved in everything?
No, and I think in all the cases you've kind of laid out, we've the people who were, you know, attributed to the crime and convicted in most cases of the crime, or pending, or at least accused, they've all done, are all doing serious time and will be not in the public for a long time. But to your point, you know, the situation that got us to that, how do we rectify that? Because, I mean, these are most cases people who are clinically insane, or they're just bad actors and they have the setting to do something like this, or the cover to feel the right to do something like this, or whatever it be. And I don't know how we fix that culturally. I think we do it by trying to listen to others and doing our due diligence before we pass judgment. But I was joking before, we don't have the resources, I think, to do that fairly and evenly. I mean, at least with newspapers and to a certain extent, you know, some news outlets in the past, we knew at least where they were leaning from. We knew who owned them, or we knew what it was. And now it's all shadowy hedge funds.
Right.
And
The Tribune was a conservative newspaper.
Right.
An Irish American institution in Chicago. And the Sun-Times was FDR, Democrat, commies. But it's gone farther than that.
Further, for sure. And it's, you know, we had other papers, representative neighborhood newspapers. And so at least you kind of knew it was baked into it. But now we don't even know. And now it's being controlled by an algorithm, even more nefarious, because who, you know, what's the end game? What's the benefit there?
It feeds our prejudices. Right. That's what concerns me, because I'm just And personally, I'm sick of it.
With over three decades of serving up streetwise insight and local perspective on Page 2, the voice of John Cass has a home at johncassnews.com.
There's a new sheriff in town.
This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have.
But as he settles in, can you deal with the hysteria, the meltdowns, the constant whining?
I don't know what to do.
You know what you need? You need a good cup of common sense.
It's just common sense.
Like the kind of common sense you get when you subscribe to johncassnews.com. I'm John Cass, 40 years a journalist in Chicago.
The Chicago way.
I opened this website, John Cass News, so that you could have a decent cup of common sense.
This great country of ours was built on its entrepreneurial spirit.
It's time that you join the frontier of independent journalism at johncassnews.com.
Subscribe today to get access to great columns from John Cass, Dan Proft, and others. Don't be a chumbalone and subscribe at johncassnews.com.
I'm sick of everything. Oh, John, that guy slit the girl's throat or burned her alive. But you remember that slavery, 1619? I'm sick of hearing it.
So it's the weird, this is the analogy I laid on it. And it's when people use it to a different means or make it the bigger issue when it's probably not. It's, you know, we kick over a rock and there's an, you know, unsightly thing and it does something unsightly. And the people are saying, well, wow, how did this happen? How did that unsightly thing happen and how did it get there? And then they say, well, the racism put it there. And so it's the racism's fault. And it's like, well,
yeah,
it's
not really.
Not really. I mean, that's an oversimplification, first of all. And second of all, yeah. That this happened because we let it happen. I don't care the reasoning. It's because we culture it just to let it happen.
So you bring a knife to a track meet, no. But it's something that happened to Virginia planters created this years ago, right? But really, really, you could blame the African kings in Ghana who sold the slaves to the white people. You could blame them. It goes on and on.
Right. You could put a long tail on this kite and yeah, probably rope everybody into it. I mean, nobody's, especially if we went historically, you know, human nature. We know what it comes back to that. You know, why does this kid have a knife and stab somebody? Well, because he's young and impulsive and, you know, doesn't make good choices and then lives in a situation where he had the righteous indignation to carry the knife in the first place. But that it all goes back to the same thing. It, you know, we're just humans and people. We could do better. I mean, there's a power in us to understand when we make mistakes and where we have our flaggings.
Exactly. Jeff, it's like we have to put hazmat suits on just to approach the subject.
I know. And it's not to say that in the case of, you know, you mentioned like the Tremblay case, it's not to say that, again, okay, so if we're reporting cases and we see violence and we see, you know, a trend line, right, these black men in these couple of these cases are maybe a symptom of an underlying issue where the city historically has pushed people and minorities and people that were without power to the side or into the worst parts of the city.
You blame the Republicans for getting people out of the institutions,
right?
Like,
sure,
taking sick people and putting them on the street because that's what was done,
right? Yeah, and it's the past the shell buck game, but then we overlook the Tremblay families of the world and, you know, the victims and the Novaks of the world who were, by all counts, didn't do anything to I mean, this kid didn't deserve to die, even if, you know, let's take it to both extremes.
Austin Cooper,
yeah. You're right. Or Metcalf. Yeah, Cooper too, but Metcalf. You know, if he was a raging racist, you know, D-bag, they still didn't deserve to die.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't matter. If he was a saint who was reaching out and trying to, you know, be a missionary to this kid, he didn't deserve to die. So he didn't deserve, and the kid didn't deserve to be in a place where he, for whatever reason, thought or needed a knife. I mean, somebody let this 17-year-old kid, you know, be that person.
How do you raise your, you know, it all comes to me, the parents. So how do you raise a child who thinks that he needs to bring a knife to a track meet?
Yeah, but I think it goes back to where you started, John, with corporate media and corporate, you know, not necessarily, I don't hate saying that because it feels like I'm, you know, a socialist or something, but
it feels like you're passing the buck.
Yeah, but it's not just the parents, right? Parents are part of the equation, and parents, you know, I'm not a parent. Exactly. I don't have kids. It's a really hard job.
That's okay. You can have an opinion.
Right. No, but I'm saying I'm not trying to you know, say I know anything above anybody else, but I know that it can be a hard job and it's very hard. And so, yeah, things happen. But it's the media at large that probably is more impactful in this situation. I don't think this kid's parents are telling him to carry a knife to school every day. I mean, what parent does that? And if they are doing that, then they should be jailed.
No, but I have two sons, both twins. I mean, they're twins, as you know. And this story of Austin Metcalf and his brother really affected me because my boys are in athletics too, and they're together, and they would feel to protect each other.
Sure.
But I mean, if I was like some kind of racist who's spreading the hate to my kids, maybe they would bring a gun to a track meet, bring a gun to a soccer match. What is that? How does that work?
That's the end of the day. Both kids' lives are completely ruined. One's irreparably ruined. This kid, hopefully, you know, comes out of this being a good person, you know, good citizen. Let's hope.
You know what? Well, there was one good. I think I'm looking for a segue here.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, where there was a good person that was on the Chicago Way last week, and what amazed me, Will Lee and you, Jeff Carlin, Will Lee, old school. Came on podcast on the first episode, the first podcast we did.
Yeah, a reissue of the very first.
Tell me Chicago about that, Jeff. How did you come up with it?
Oh, I mean, that was just perfect because we are recovering from an excellent wedding. You and your family invited us to be there for Krista and Peter's beautiful ceremony, which I talked about a little bit in the opening.
Yeah, you were very kind.
And it only made sense that we take the time and try to shoehorn something in because I was tired. It was easier to find something that I thought was really powerful. And I think listening to that, because that first episode was, we didn't know what to do. You didn't know, you know, what to do as far as what I was hoping for. I got what I wanted. It was that idea of, you know, talking about a story, talking about a live issue, talking about something that someone, you know, is not going to experience, but doesn't mean it's not interesting. You know, the column they would get out of the Tribune would be the final product. Lots of hands had been on it, and you know, one way or another,
right?
And it was fit to print. But the story of how it got there is just as interesting for different reasons. I mean, it's the idea of what, you know, what wasn't true, what was true, like, you know, what pushback or feedback are you getting from editorial? What are you getting back from maybe even sales through editorial being like, hey, you know, can't be talking about that hospital, or, you know, could we lay off that hospital? Like, well, no, but, you know, whatever it is. Even if it's out in the wind, you're hearing things like that. I love that stuff. And Will, such a talent. I mean, he's just somebody who would just lives in every moment for that moment and takes it all in. Because he's the type of guy you ask yourself, oh, I remember this back and then. And there were 10 guys there, and this guy was wearing that. And this
is a great conversation.
Yeah.
And I remember when we first met each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. We met each other over reporter's notepads. One was in my pocket, the other was in his pocket. And there was a police sergeant in Chatham who had been murdered. And the poor young man, he was trying to protect his beautiful new motorcycle. And a gang of Utes were outside and they were damaging it. And he came out, and his father came out, and he wanted to, you know, he's a police sergeant, and so he's like protecting his property. And then he was murdered. He was shot to death. And I remember Will's, you're at a breaking news event, a lot of emotion in there. And I liked his moves. He was like giving the people, he didn't take the notepad out immediately. It's something I learned too about over a long period of time. You don't take the notepad out as a sword, like you're going to intimidate somebody. What is your name, sir? You know, you don't do that. He was just sitting there on a porch. Yeah. We're talking to people, the neighbors. And they were all grieving about this young police sergeant. You know, it was a black neighborhood, and they were being besieged by black people who were thugs. They were good people. Yeah. And they were there. Remember, at that time, the city of Chicago, in its wisdom, infamous wisdom, decided to break down public housing,
right?
So they could, so their allies could make money on the real estate and develop it,
right? Which they still haven't done. Years later, in some spots they have, but most of it they haven't.
Right? Where were we?
So you and Will are there. I mean, your notepads out.
Notepads. Well, we are keeping our remembering what people were saying. We wanted to let them in on the fact that we were going to help them tell their story. Yeah. And it was sad because they worked so hard, like doubly hard. Black people struggling to raise money for down payments in a middle-class neighborhood. And then you close Cabrini Green and send everybody out this way. How did they do that? I don't know. Why did they do that?
I don't know. I mean, like you said, people get money. But so this is the first, Will and Will didn't know each other at all. I mean, Will were working for the Tribune.
Will was working for the Tribune as a reporter, young reporter. And I was writing a column. I thought this would be a good column, you know, Sergeant.
Sure.
I mean, I'll try to find it and put it and give it to you. But the fact is that we didn't know each other, and then I saw his moves, and I liked it.
That's awesome. I love that, because Will is that kind of guy. Will is so
Game of Thrones, man.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking about that. I wonder what he's thinking. I was thinking the other day, he's probably right in the middle of a rewatch, preparing for House of the Dragon coming back.
Another reason why I want to talk about this is because I've lost touch with him.
Yeah.
He moved up at the Tribune as I left.
Mm-hmm.
And I loathe the Tribune now, and I don't want to compromise him.
Sure.
I don't want people who are my friends, like Liam and Meisner and other people, to bear the brunt of my relationship with the Tribune. But I think about him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's senior deputy, the Metro editor, I believe, is his official title now.
That means he's sending young reporters out on the street to do the stuff we did.
Yeah.
He'd be a good guest.
I used to love I'll reach out to him. Talk to Will, see if he's around. But I love Will for also his
kindness.
His kindness. Oh, totally. Total kindness. But his coverage of the Night Court. It's so good. He used to make it into such a drama, and he would live tweet it sometimes, and it was always the best, because he just such a great way of describing people and their personas, and just I could hear the Night Court music in my head as he was typing away. So hat tip to Will Lee.
And there's no other guy I would want to do a story to help me with the story on, let's say, the ugly Obama Center.
Right. It's too bad Will is not, there's no crime involved, apparently, so far in this, because Will's beat his crime for the most part. But this Obama, I'll explain it. I mean, Leah, you sent me the story. I've got my thoughts on it.
Well, go ahead. You first.
Oh, but you sent me the story. So you are presenting the story, John. You brought it up.
Go on.
All right. So there's a report out that there are subcontractors of the Barack Obama Presidential Center, not library, because they're going to make money.
The Santra.
Yeah. Right. They're going to make money off of it, so it can't be a library.
Right.
Hey, how you doing? The subcontractors saying that they are not getting paid, or they have not gotten paid. They have outstanding bills. The center is set to open this week, the 20th. So, yeah.
Where's the DEI room? Do they have a wing?
No, it's a whole campus, John. You can't.
But he created DEI.
He didn't create DEI. He just amplified. He just became the torch that carried it. I think we give him too much credit sometimes.
I don't think you're giving him enough credit for that.
I give him great credit for, much like I give Clinton credit for being just good communicators who are
yeah.
Are
Clinton passionate. Was a good communicator.
Right. But he was so kind of fungible in a lot of his the things he would say and do. And I don't know. Back to the story at hand, John. I'm going to bring us back around
the
here.
The fact is, where's the money?
Well, so this is the story. So the Obama Presidential Center supposedly was supposed to have this big safety net to cover any possible cost overruns and whatever. $470 million was the number, and it turns out they may have only like $1 million. And, oh, yeah, there are subcontractors who are saying they haven't gotten paid and that they have bills that are should be covered and stuff that should be covered by this fund.
You know what complicates this story? The guy who's not getting paid or the they're white guys.
But it's not just him. I mean, there's also some guy named Omar Sharif who said that there are several black-owned contractors who are having trouble because of this. And it's not surprising. I mean, it's anything I've learned. I mean, remember, this is the same presidential administration or president whose administration and at least his election campaign, had Springfield on the hook. And in his home state, supposedly, home state, for thousands, if not $1 million for security stuff that his campaign promised to pay for every time he would come through and make a stop. And, I'm not surprised by any of this. And I think it just goes to show, and that's why I kind of open with the idea that it's not a library because they want to make money off of it, that it's Disney World. It's it's an attraction now. It has nothing to do with anything other than realizing the American dream of taking other people's money. I mean, that's it.
It's really pathetic, but I don't have anything to say.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, sure, will it be – maybe there would be some creativity and art and, great things happening there. Well, sure.
Well,
but at the end of the day, same thing can be said for Disneyland. Same thing can be said for Dollywood.
What? Wait, Jeff. Don't sell this thing. Don't sell this short. You could put Rahm Emanuel in a little Ewok, furry Ewok costume. And well, have him
passed on that museum, John. Sorry.
You could have him do the Obama Santra.
Oh yeah, we passed on that. So no Lucas Museum. We got the Obama Center. So
oh,
man. I mean, hey, I'm not gonna knock it till I try it. So I will definitely put it on my list of places to visit.
What about a wing call for James Comey and John Brennan on the Obama Santra? It's called the House of Whispers.
That's not the parking lots, John. You know how you don't have to remember where you park. This is the Comey lot. That's the Clapper lot.
All right.
I think the odds of you going there are probably as good as you going to see the Chicago Bears play in Hammond. I think that's what do you think you'll get to first?
I think I'd rather go to Hammond.
Yeah, well, I'm still not convinced the Bears are – it's a done deal that's ever going to happen. And if it does, it's not going to be – I'd put my money on 2034 if it's for a stadium possibly opening ever in Hammond at the earliest.
Oh, come on, Mr. Negativity.
Which means that the Bears would then have to probably rent the stadium on the lakefront for a couple of extra years. But, that's a long way down. I still don't think. But this is the point of the story is, and the Chicago Way connection to this whole Bears thing, is that the Bears, that in very Chicago Way and way, that there was a deal in writing, maybe not in writing, but maybe at least in agreement that the Bears will get with everything they need to grow and prosper at Arlington Heights, and that they will offset and to be responsible citizens and have tax space there and everything would be great, except that Chicago Democrats refused to vote on anything because Chicago Democrats knew that there was no way, even from the jump, that the Bears were going to stay in Chicago because the stadium deal in Arlington Heights has been in the works for And these are whispers, but this in for the last 25 years, and I've lived in that area. I know many people who are with firsthand knowledge of McCaskey involvement in economic enterprises tied to Arlington Heights, and a very friendly relationship between that family and the family that owned the track for a long time. So that being said, the Chicago Democrats knew this stadium was never going to happen. The Bears were going to leave Chicago, and they were going to have to wear that as a, hey, these are the guys, these are your elected officials who let your favorite team leave the city. And to keep that from being a lonely ship of just Chicago Democrats, they tanked the deal in Arlington Heights so that if anything happens, it'll be all of us in the state let this happen, and the Bears will go to Hammond, and it will look like they all dropped the ball. Strength in numbers.
Could you please call my cardiologist and let me let me have a cigarette now, because I've used broken that down. They're sending the Bears to Hammond to cover up their inability to make a deal is the most Chicago way thing I ever heard. Right. That's the Chicago way.
Exactly. And this is, and I don't know, we maybe we'll have him on. Mark Gannis is a guy who's been involved in marketing and building stadiums and teams branding for you for a long, long time. And he's been very vocal on this too, and has saw this happening and has been yelling about this for months about how Chicago Democrats are letting this happen, and they're going to let it happen and cover themselves. This is very much, and they're getting in Indiana, John. You know, your state is giving away the farm. Let's be absolutely clear here that they're saying, hey, we've got extra money, you can have all of it, essentially, all only, and then make sure that we get to tax, coming back to us.
Jeff's a little upset. No, I sense a little bit of green-eyed little envy.
Not really.
Arlington
not
really. Heights, yeah. Uh-huh.
Maybe under a subterfuge here. But the reality is I lost trust in the NFL years ago and really any care about the X's and O's of and dollars and cents for any team or anyone tied to them. I mean,
I agree.
They're all millionaires and billionaires. I could care less. I'll watch the games on TV if I can when available and root for them. But everything else to me is a window dressing that I don't care about. So whatever.
Wait, it's speaking of not caring, as you highlighted, the most Chicago way story that we've ever covered, which is this one. Understand that the United States men's national team is in the World Cup. They just dispatched a great team in Paraguay.
Yeah.
Paraguay slaughtered a bunch of great teams, South American teams, including Brazil and others. And then the USMNT, much to Dan Prof's chagrin and shame, they dispatched them. It was great. I loved it.
Yeah, they, as anyone would say, they say that FIFA is less than a scrupulous organization.
FIFA's as crooked as the politics that Dan and I have been covered all our lives.
All right. Well, so at least that's on the table. Yeah. Do we think there's a chance, just a chance, that these games may not be broken, they could be fixed?
No.
Just because, like you said, is U.S. men's team that good? I guess that's my real question.
I'm predicting now the U.S. men's team gets in the quarterfinal, and then after that, everything is open. They're going to win. They're going
to
win
4-1 over Paraguay. Crazy.
That's crazy. Even 1-0
over. Right. Paraguay. Well, that's what I'm saying. So
I love it. I love
it. Smells like a duck. It walks like a duck. It's got a brown envelope like a duck. It's
I love it.
I'm just saying. I know it's fun. I'm sad. I didn't watch the first game, the first U.S. game. I caught a little bit of Mexico on the TV at the.
It's not bodega. The same.
I know.
All right, anybody listening, the next game that you have to watch is Friday, 2 to 2 o'clock or 3-2 o'clock.
Yes, Friday, 2 o'clock Central,
and Fox on Fox. You can watch it free.
U.S. Australia,
yeah,
coming to us from Seattle.
Australia beat somebody big time. They beat Turkey.
Yeah, they did.
Oh my God. My poor heart can't take the joy.
How about UK or England rather? Because it's Croatia too on Wednesday. That will be a good one.
That'll be good.
Wow. Croatia. And yeah. If anybody's still listening to us, John, now that we've
started, now we've talked soccer.
Yeah, at least we got the football out of the way first.
We had a boss at WLS who hated talking soccer.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
He was a good man, but he didn't understand how beautiful the game was.
He didn't care about sports at all, John. He, except for the Dodgers. He was, I think,
and the Yankees.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's right from New York. Well, John, I think we will check out, see what happens in the World Cup, and we'll see what happens in if the Chicago Bears of Hammond, or the formerly Chicago Bears of Hammond. I don't know.
I can't wait. I can't wait for the Bears of Hammond. I just hope.
I think we're going to have to wait a while.
I just hope we have, well, we're going to have McDonald's at the
Skyway?
Chicago Fire Stadium.
Yeah, that's going to be amazing. I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, the Sox, it's by all accounts, the Sox are going to be there too. This is for those who are done. This is what they call it, the 78. Is that what we're calling it now? Or
I don't think they should glom on and grab.
They should.
No. We'll that, put their own money. Neat. See, they're trying
they,
to.
They are.
Really?
No, yeah,
they're
they
trying
are.
To so get they, so, Joe Mansueto's money.
No. I don't know the details on it, but there's the guy who's got the agreement with Reinsdorf to buy the Sox over like the next 3 or 4 years, or whatever.
Yeah, the buy it and then, kick Reinsdorf out. He's the worst owner right, in history. Right.
So this guy reportedly has bought this spot in that. That development that they're trying to push through for a stadium, and his plan is to move the team there, build a stadium, move it there. Which, could you imagine, John? Can you just think about that? If it was a time flash forward to we have the Chicago White Sox of the Loop, or just outside the Loop, you know, whatever we call it, South Loop now, whatever it's going to be called, and the Chicago and the Bears gone. So those two stadiums now sitting essentially virtually empty and useless, and both being owned by the state and the city. Like, what?
Enjoy your, what? You know, enjoy it, taxpayers.
There's the harbinger of, you know, the Detroit to come. You know, there's a story, remember, in Detroit, and I don't know if people ever experienced this firsthand, but I definitely did quite a few times. But there was this project to put off ramps on the loop, the bypass loop in downtown Detroit. And it was to be going on right around the time the city went bankrupt. It was about a third of the way done. And when you drove through Detroit after this.
Oh, to get it on 94? Yeah, right.
Oh, God, yeah. It was awful. I mean, there were just, like, the roads and highways that just didn't end. They just ended all of a sudden. And you just looked like, oh, my God, what a shell of what the city could have been and where it was, is, you know, kneecapped in growth. I fear this 78 program is going to be kind of that. Either, A, it's going to be completed, and then we're going to have these, you know, the stadiums that are just going to fall into what? Disrepair or be nothing. Or it's not going to get finished, but they'll break ground and we'll have this, you know, eyesore with a thumb to all the people who fled this city, sitting in the middle of it, these unfinished projects.
Excuse me? I think you should do one thing. Put some bacon on that. Make it taste better as it goes down.
I know. I'm such an optimist, John.
Yeah. Not really.
But if the Chicago ways are well alive, I have little reason to be.
For Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, future physics teacher, friend of cats, my friend and co-host here. And for me, John Cass, editor of John Cass News. We always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Join us again next time for another edition of the Chicago Wave Podcast on WGN+.